Oh boy, automotive enthusiasts everywhere, as far as the eyes and ears and internet can reach. It's that time again. Yes, another
clinquent episode of V8 Radio, Kevin.
Clinquent?
Clinquent. It means glittering with gold and silver.
Holy mackerel, I couldn't be farther from the truth, but I love it. Clinquent.
Yeah, man.
It's got the back half of delinquent, which is interesting.
It does.
So I guess if you had a clinquent delinquent, you'd have, you know, like Liberace breaking windows or something.
God dang it. Oh, gee whiz. I'm done with these overselling adjectives now.
Yeah. Well, this is the V8 Radio Podcast. I'm Kevin Oostie, joined, as always, by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal Clark.
And instead of clinquent, I was glittered with gold and silver, I was glittered with dirt and grease until about 5 minutes before the show started.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I was trying to get the, it had a beautiful day today, trying to clean the garage out, you know, get all the winter out, get the salt out, get all the dirt out, and start making it nice again. I got about half of it done.
Yeah, well, very nice. It's a great start. You know, what also makes for a great start is an automotive trivia question at the beginning of our show. Yeah.
What a segue. Yeah, what a segue, folks.
I'm a true amateur. Have you prepared an automotive trivia question that can be asked in the beginning and revealed at the end?
Indeed, sir. All right, here we go. So, Kevin, a couple shows ago, you asked me about what was the last about the pace cars in Daytona.
The last Trans Am.
Last Trans Am. Oh, you said what was the last Pontiac to pace the Daytona 500, I think. But I said the Grand Prix, and the significance was it was the first front-wheel drive to pace Daytona. And, of course, that was incorrect. But, Kevin, I'm going to ask you, what was the first front-wheel drive car to pace the Daytona 500?
A Honda Civic.
Oh, the look on his face.
Wow. I don't know. This is just going to be a complete random. So, first front drive pace car.
Yes.
Daytona 500.
And I'm not going to make it a trick question. There have been front wheel drive cars that paced Daytona. So I'm not going to.
I'm sure. I just kind of lost track of pace cars right around 2002, I think.
Mm.
So, but knowing that NASCAR, you know, Toyota races in NASCAR and they make a lot of front drivers. So I'm going to say it was a Toyota product of some sort.
Okay.
And I'm going to say it was a, I have no idea what the era was, so I can't tell you, like, I can't specifically say it was, like, you know, an 06 Corolla or something. But
right. Well, I'm going to give you an opportunity for bonus here and ask what year it was, too.
Yeah, okay. So it was an 06 Corolla. No, I'm going to say it was a Camry.
Okay. Camry, you say.
All right. Yeah.
Care to guess the year?
Yeah, it was 05.
05.
That's my guess.
All right. Final answer?
Completely unqualified guess.
Duly noted.
Right.
All right, big time. What do you got for me?
Okay. So, nothing that hard. Good God. This is an easy one, I think.
I've heard that before.
What is or was the Chevera?
Chevera. Holy cow.
Yeah, look at that.
Dude.
That's pronounced Chevera.
Okay. All right, the Chevera. What is the Chevera?
That was the question.
That is the question. Okay. Oh, my gosh, dude.
And I don't know, you know, is or was, because it was, it still exists, it or they may still exist. So what is works.
Okay.
A little bit of a time clue in that, maybe. But I'm not asking for time or year. Bonus if you get the year.
Thank you. Good Lord. All right, a Chevera. I mean, Chevelle comes into mind because just from hearing Chevera.
Oh, I guess the Chev.
The Chevere. Oh, yeah. Okay. Come on, Michael. Get it together.
Sound it out. Yeah. Use your words.
All right. The Chevera was a General Motors product that was sold in Mexico, exclusively in for the Mexican market. And it was a van, the Chevera.
Man, holy detail.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Laid that one down with authority.
Yeah, well, lack of knowledge is what it was.
A GM product sold in Mexico exclusively for the Mexican market.
Yeah, man.
And a van.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome question, dude.
Well, we might as well just hang it up. I mean, looks like you might have gotten it.
Yeah.
But we'll find out at the end of the show.
Can't wait. Can't wait. Please, please, people, stay on for this one.
Right. For sure. For sure. Mm-hmm. Before we really run off the rails, got a couple of shout outs.
We do have a couple of shout outs. You want to hit this one?
I got one.
Yeah.
Mr. Kenny Gregrich.
I think it's Gregrich.
Gregrich.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Mr. Gregrich showered us with nice compliments, and we appreciate that. It was very nice of him. And he said, hey, thanks for being an advocate for pawn shops. Our last episode, as you know, being a repeat listener, we discussed buying cool stuff at pawn shops on the cheap. Kenny mentions that his family has had a pawn shop since 1974, and it's what pays for his Pontiac obsession.
Right
so
on.
The money generated goes to good cause.
Yeah, it does. And he sent a picture of a beautiful, right in front of his pawn shop, a beautiful 73 Formula 400 four-speed and a 67 Firebird convertible with a 69 Trans Am hood on it.
Which is awesome, and I've never seen that before.
I haven't either. I was looking at this thing. I'm like, there's something going on with this car. Then I finally put all the pieces together. I'm like, that is super dope. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, they're beautiful cars. So thanks for sharing that, Kenny.
Yeah, it was very cool. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate the kind words. I got another one that came as a message through the Facebooks, and it's from a guy named Tom Boyle. And Tom is a guy that I kind of ancillary grew up with. He's a few years older than I am.
Uh-huh.
We went to high school together. He was in a more advanced grade than I by a couple of years. And we ended up going to college together for a year or so.
Oh, cool.
And this was when I was going to Columbia College in Chicago. So I was living with my parents and in a suburb, and then taking the L train down to the city. And Tom and I would take the L together, and we had classes together and whatnot.
Oh, cool.
And he was a really, really funny guy, and we had a lot of great times. And he reached out, and I have not talked to Tom in years. And he said, hey, I got to say, I'm a big fan of your podcast. I love seeing what you're doing with the muscle cars and the whole thing. So it was just really great to hear from him. And it reminds me, he had a 79 Z28 in high school.
Okay, yeah.
Dark blue camel interior.
Cool.
I believe it either had like no mufflers or it had some kind of a cam, and it was like one of the local legend cars.
Oh, really?
and it's funny because there are cars in my area, you know, driven by guys like Nick Scavo and
yes,
you know, serious legend cars. Tom's was just, you know, that loud Camaro that was always going fast somewhere, you know. So it was cool. It was good it was a neat car to have in the neighborhood. Unless you live next door and got woken up every time you went somewhere.
No, yeah, no one likes to hear that cold start.
Yeah, but not legend like, you know, Chuck Samuel, but this was good to hear from. So
Nice.
Thank you for tuning in, Tom.
Nice. Good stuff, man. We've been getting a lot of love lately from people. I'm really enjoying this.
Yes, we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Little motivation to keep rocking.
Keep the wheels turning.
That's right. So you're cleaning the garage. Whoa. And you need to clean that up now.
I need to clean that up. What on earth was that? I don't even know, man.
Find out at the end of the show.
No doubt. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so we have a two-car garage. I'm blessed to have a little extra wider of a garage where I can have my toolbox and stuff and still be able to fit two cars in here. I have the GTO on one side and my wife parks on the other. So I cleaned out her side. There's just a lot of stuff accumulating and just not where it belongs and not put away right. And, you know, the floor just gets dirty from coming in when it's snowy and it just starts looking a mess. So I spent the day getting all that arranged and cleaned out and make it nice for her. So.
For sure. And it's, you know, a nice rite of passage. It's springtime. That means you'd be able to get the car back out on the road soon. And
yeah, pretty soon.
I was doing a lot of garage work myself this morning. Again, like yourself, beautiful day here in the 70s and sunny out. And I'm working on and making progress on two cars at the same time.
Really?
Yeah.
Get out of here. The Riv and the Galaxy?
Yeah. So the Riv was just a little maintenance, tightening up the drum brakes, doing a little front brake adjustment. And I got to tell you, man, drum brakes get a bad rap.
They do get a bad rap. You're right.
Because, you know, this car weighs a lot. I think 4,400, right around there, 4,350. Whoa. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like a 5,000-pound Cadillac, but it's a plus-size two-door.
Yeah.
And Buicks were known for having really good brakes back in the day. And I was talking to somebody who was saying, hey, you're going to do a disc brake swap on that because it's four-wheel drum brakes. And I said, you know, I don't think I am. I think for the type of driving that I do, which is just driving the thing around, it stops really good. And he was like, oh, aren't you concerned with brake fade and, you know, inability to modulate the pedal and all, you know, well, if I was on a road course, yeah, that'd be something. But if you do the math, you look at a pair of disc brake pads that grab the rotor, each one is what, 2 inches by 4 inches, maybe?
Yes.
So you're looking at what, 8 square inches per pad? So 16 square inches of friction material.
Yeah.
This Buick has like 11-inch drums. And the shoe is 2 inches wide, and it wraps halfway around the drum on the one side, and then a 2-inch wide pad halfway around the drum on the other side. So it's almost a complete cover. So it's got to be 40 square inches of friction area.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot.
It's like, you know, six times what the disc is. The downside is that that creates a lot of heat because it's a lot of friction. And that's what makes the pad material, the shoe material get greasy, and then they start to fade. Right. And Buick's way to combat that was to use an aluminum drum. So the front drums are aluminum with a cast iron lining in them. Mm-hmm. And if you're a guy like me who does mostly, you know, two-lane highway driving, a little bit in town, and I hit the brakes, you know, every couple of minutes at the most, they never get hot. They never fade. And it stops like crazy.
Nice.
So, yeah. But I had noticed that pedal travel was getting a little bit long. So, drum brake car, you crawl underneath and flip the star wheel and adjust them out a little bit, and blammo, here you go. So
nice. So I wonder when, I know on cars with rear drums, I know GM cars didn't they have like an automatic adjuster if you back the car up
and
hit the brakes on, it would adjust the rears?
Well, this one, four-wheel,
automatic
adjusting brakes, but it never works.
Oh, I gotcha.
It just, and what I like to do, you know, the old rule of thumb, according to the manuals from the day, are you jack the thing up and you give the pads enough friction to where they're just barely touching the inside of the drum, and you spin the wheel, and it should just kind of go one rotation.
Okay.
And stop. Now, they don't say apply 26 foot-pounds of torque on it.
Right.
And, you know, spin it at, you know, one RPM or whatever it is. So it's a little subjective. But I kind of set it to where it felt like that one rotation was pretty solid and made sure they were both identical on both sides, because that's where people get messed up on drums. One grabs before the other, and then you get the dynamic lane change feature when you hit the brakes.
At no extra cost.
Yeah. And my Galaxy had that problem real bad. And this was back before, you know, at the time, the Galaxy was an easier car to just do a four-wheel disc conversion, and we put the Hydro Boost on it. And it stops phenomenally. I mean, it stops better than the Buick does, for sure. Mm-hmm. But the Buick's not far behind with four-wheel original style drums. And, you know, not to say it couldn't be improved, but to make a long story long, it's driving well, stopping well, so that's all good.
Nice.
And then the Galaxy, so you remember last year I put some new seats in it. I put those Scat Pro Car low-back reclining articulated buckets in it. And I made the mounts. Our friend Grady helped me out. And that was kind of phase one, just get them in the car. And it turned out that they were, because of the seat track design, I used the original Ford seat tracks and mounted them to the new seat. Mm-hmm. And the Ford original bucket seat, the mount was kind of up inside the seat. Okay. And the sides of the seat kind of spilled over the frame. Sure. So they sat lower in the car. When we made these new mounts, it was just basically an adapter plate. I noticed right away that I was sitting too high up in the car. I wanted to sit lower. So I pulled the tracks out and pulled one of the seats out and been scratching my head. And I think I can take almost 2 inches out of it.
No kidding.
Which would be right on, yeah.
That'd be perfect, yeah.
Because it was, you know, you felt like you were sitting on a, you know, a bar stool driving down the road.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, you know, head over the windshield. But it's one of those things where a half an inch makes a big difference in a seat when you're in a car. So a couple inches, it's going to be able to put you nice down low. And
right.
It's got the tilt wheel, so it'll be nice and adjustable and comfortable. And the other half of that is I was able to mount the seat on the track further back, because people in 62 were shorter, apparently.
Clearly. Yeah.
So more leg room and all that. So I got the design kind of sussed out. I'm going to take them down to the shop and cut, chop, weld, and put it back together, and that thing should be dialed.
Nice, man. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Love the progress.
And speaking of the Riv, I had a wobble at 70, 65 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And the wheels that are on it are a set of original style Buick chrome road wheels that I got from a buddy of mine who actually was using them on a trailer.
Oh, boy.
So they were rusty and kind of banged up. And he's like, I don't know if these are straight, but, you know, you can have them. So he gave them to me, which was wonderful. And I've been looking for a better set because two of them are bent pretty bad. And that was the wobble. So for the past couple of years, I've had this nationwide search on for a clean set of straight Buick road wheels, and these are a 3-year wheel that are designed, ironically, to go around disc brakes. They're a bigger opening inside, but it's only a 15x6. It's not a big wide wheel. And every time I'd find a nice set, they would be snapped up like instantly, or the guy wouldn't ship them from the other side of the country, or, you know, that kind of thing. Well, it turns out that a guy who has a shop in Red Bud, Illinois, where our shop is, right around the corner, a guy named Clay, I've known him for years, he's a good guy. He posts an ad on the Facebook Marketplace for a set of 4 Buick chrome road wheels off a 66 Riv that he had. And he wanted a couple $100 for them. And I'm like, heck yeah. So I called him up. He said, I'll send him over. So one of his people comes and drops him off. And she said, yeah, he said, how about 5 wheels for $100?
Well, I don't know.
So that was really cool. I owe Clay a beverage for that one. And the process right now, I put him on our wheel balancer to slowly spin them and just see if they were bent or not.
Yeah.
And I think I need 2, and 2 of them are really nice. A little bit rusty, but not mangled. So as I speak right now, I've got one of them soaking in a 5-gallon bucket of Evaporust.
Oh, very nice.
To de-rust the backside of the wheel. Uh-huh. And I only have enough of the evaporust chemical to do like half a wheel at a time.
So oh, really?
I had to clock it every day.
Nice.
Rotate it in the bucket. But it beats, you know, grinding on it or messing with it. It's just doing its own thing. And then I'll polish up the chrome and repaint the black and then mount them up and balance. And hopefully it takes care of the little shimmy.
No, they should look dynamite when you're done.
Yeah, this is one of those cars that the stock wheel looks great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
what is the stock wheel? Is it a stamped steel with a wheel cover?
Well, no, these chrome road wheels were the, it's the optional stock wheel.
Oh, it is the optional. Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So the car came with stamped steel wheels with hubcaps.
Okay.
And when I got the car in 2015 or whatever it was, it had a set of Eagle GT Plus 4 tires on it.
Oh, yeah?
Which, you know, had a date code, we think, around 1988.
Sweet!
And that thing drove like it was on glass rails.
Really?
It was so smooth. There was not a shimmy, not a shake, not a nothing.
Oh, man.
And Trevor's like, you need to stop driving this.
Now.
Because you're just going to rip the skins off these tires like, you know, onions.
Yeah.
Because they're so old and dry rotted. I'm like, but look at how nice it drives.
But it's so great.
Yeah. So I'm trying to recapture that feeling with more modern rubber and wheels that would have come on the car if the cheap person that bought this thing new would have sprung for the wheels.
Nice.
And she did not.
Oh, man. Well, there's not a lot in the way of options on that Riv either. I mean, it's a AC nothing. Delete car.
Yeah, no AC, crank windows. It's got a tilt wheel, which I think was not an option. I think they all had it.
Okay.
And it's got a speed buzzer in the dash, the little...
Yeah.
You turn the knob and you line up the needle with whatever speed you want, and when you get there, it starts buzzing.
That's not annoying at all.
It's kind of cool. The buzzer quit. It's the same buzzer as the key.
Oh, okay.
You know, the key buzzer thing, sure. And that's part of the horn relay on this car, and the horn and the key buzzer quit, and I was trying to fix that the other day. And my wife was not home, and I was here by myself, and I had the cell phone with me, and it was a little bit out of reach, and I got wedged under the dashboard and almost freaked out.
Oh, man. That's not good.
Horn relay's up behind the gauge cluster, and I thought I was stuck. And of course, my mind goes, you know, the house is going to burn down.
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be an explosion.
And they're going to find your charred remains under the dash with the cell phone just out of reach.
And your other hand on the horn relay.
That's it. I would have finally found it right when the house blew up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how you will things to happen.
I know. I had this vision of Chris Farley, unfortunately. They found Farley clutching a rosary on the ground in his apartment.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
he died of a drug overdose. It was a horrible thing. And it was even more horrible knowing that he knew
it was happening.
There's a problem here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking under the dash. And I'm like, no.
No. It's not the way I want to go.
No, not at all. But, yeah, anyway, got a lot of stuff going on here. And I was able to skip out for a little while. At the same time, because I had mentioned the Firebird Fest.
Yeah.
That is coming to our little town of Waterloo, Illinois on May 21st. Well, the organizer called me and he said, hey, we're going to be doing a dry run, kind of the Firebird Fest to come to Waterloo. We're going to bring some cars, check it out. You know, can you come out? And I said, sure. So I went out there, and they had 30 cars.
No kidding.
And a lot of cool ones. There was, you know, of course, you had your variety, mostly second-gen, late 70s Trans Ams, because that's what they made the most of.
Sure.
Some third-gen cars, some early, you know, early 70s Firebirds. In fact, a blue one that has a new owner, but the previous owner, we did all the work on the car.
Okay.
We did Global West suspension and brakes and wheels and tires and a bunch of stuff, a Hydro Boost. And I saw the car and I'm like, hey, and I met the guy and he's like, oh yeah, this is great. I want to bring it to you guys to, you know, to continue on. So that's cool.
Right on.
There was a Fire Am there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You familiar with the Fire Am?
I haven't heard that term in 100 years.
Yeah, so the Fire Am is a very specific car that was done by Herb Adams.
All right.
And Herb Adams was a famous road racer, chassis builder, and he would set these cars up with revised suspension geometry and better brakes and springs and wheels and tires and a different graphics package. So they handle a lot better than the stock Trans Am, even a stock WS6. And I think this one was a 78 or 9, 79, I think. Mm-hmm. Beautiful car, gray, to see the stripes and the Fire Am stuff on it was unusual. It's kind of like a Mecum, like the Macho TA, remember those?
Oh, right, yeah.
Right, so it was a little off-brand, but you could buy it new with that, with those accessories on it. And they were pretty cool. So I was kind of surprised to see one of those. And then, of course, they had Buford T. Justice and Jr. were there. And the Bandit himself.
It has to be there.
And that was a lot of fun. It was, when I first heard that, you know, they're going to have the Buford T. Justice and the Bandit. And, you know, sometimes the big shows, they get the Snowman with the semi.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's really cool. But, you know, to me, it's like, it's more about the cars than, you know, some of the other stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I'll tell you what, man, that just added so much to this little experience.
I bet, yeah. Oh, for sure.
This guy was so good as Buford T. Justice. He looked exactly like him. He had all the lines memorized.
I love it.
And little details down to Junior. Whenever anybody would take their picture, Junior would look at the ground. Just, you know, in shame.
That's brilliant.
Oh, it was. And they had a, you know, the Grand, I guess it was a Grand Am police car.
Yes.
The sheriff's car, the brown one.
It was a Le Mans, I think.
Le Mans. Yeah, yeah. Le Mans. A damn near perfect replica, the blue rollers on top, the Texas license plates and the star on the door. Did not have the shaker hood, because a lot of them in the movie had shaker hoods.
Oh, yeah, they did. Remember didn't
that.
They?
I don't know what that was all about, but...
Hmm.
So that was cool to see. And then our guy Chad came out and shot some drone footage of the cars. And
cool.
I did a little bit of video. So we're going to put out a little promo video and help him out.
Nice.
And so Rod, who's the organizer, came up to me and he said, "Hey, we did some flyers. If you don't mind, you know, helping us hand them out to get some interest, because they got 167 cars signed up already."
Terrific.
They're looking to bring a couple hundred. And I said, "Sure, yeah, no problem." And I read the flyer, and at the top it says, "Hosted by the Waterloo Optimist Club," which is true, and by VATV personality Kevin Ostey.
So, hey! I'm glad they asked.
Well, if you're on the flyer, you're doing it, you know? So that was kind of funny. And it's great. I'm happy to help them out. Super nice people. It's going to be a really cool event. So
yeah, and that's May 21st, right?
Yeah, it's actually that whole weekend, and they're cruising all around and doing different stuff, but they'll be in our town on the 21st.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can make it down for that, because that sounds like a must-see show.
I think it is. I mean, yeah. Just looking at the cars that were here today, I mean, there was a Knight Rider replica, you know, which normally I don't pay too much attention to. Again, it's a TV thing. But this one all of a sudden started talking to me in the voice.
Oh, jeez.
That's kind of cool, you know, actually.
Yeah.
So this event is, it's going to be for a charity called Kids Rock Cancer, which I knew nothing about. There's only a couple of medical institutions in the country that do this, but they treat cancer with kids and music. They play music. They teach them how to play instruments. And it apparently helps their mental state, which helps them heal. And
sure. I'm all about that. That's fantastic.
It is. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, man. Huh. I never would have thought, would have put those two together, but I love the concept.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to be in a good mental state to try to, you know, heal completely.
Right.
So.
And that's the hardest thing when you feel like crap and you got a, you know, scary diagnosis.
Yeah.
You go into that fear mode, and all of a sudden everything hurts just because you're stressing yourself out and all that. And if you can release that with, you know, with music, I think that that's pretty cool. So I'm going to learn more about that because I don't know very much about that organization or the process, but it sounds interesting.
Good deal. Well, good. I mean, that sounds like a worthy and worthwhile cause.
It is. So when I was leaving the event today, I drove the RIV and I had it parked in the town square. And today for the dry run, everybody went to City Hall, and the City Hall completely cleared out all the police cars from the parking lot, and everybody parked there, and it was kind of nice. And I was there probably about 2 hours, and I'm walking back to the other side of the town square where my car was. I couldn't see it from City Hall. I mean, it's about 3 blocks away. And as I'm getting closer, I put my hand in my pocket and I'm feeling around, and I don't find my keys.
Oh, no.
Yeah, exactly. And I have 3 sets of keys for this car. 2 of them are originals.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I have all the original keys for this thing, and I don't use those. You know,
sure.
I use my hardware store copies. And that's the set that I lost. And I'm looking around, and I'm like, oh, man. And I'm holding these flyers, and I'm like, well, I think I left the door open, so at least I'll throw the flyers in the car, and then I'll start backtracking or whatnot.
Yeah.
And I open the door, and there's the keys hanging in the ignition. Just they're hanging in the ignition.
Awesome. Nailed it.
Yeah. Well, and here we go.
Oh, my goodness.
So what it tells you is that, you know, in my absent-mindedness, fortunately, I live in an area where you can do that and the car doesn't disappear.
That is lucky.
I don't recommend it, of course.
But. No, no doubt. Yeah, I get squirrely if I'm out with a GTO and I leave it anywhere, even if it's locked up, which is the easiest car in the world to get into.
Oh, yeah.
But I always have a fear that it's going to be gone when I get back, and I'm going to just cry my eyes out because I'll never see it again. And it's going to be gone, and it's going to end up in a foreign country and or chopped up into a million pieces, and that's going to be it. So
it's a lot of anxiety.
It is, and I need to work on that. But
if you went all the way to chopped up into pieces in a foreign country, I mean, that's that's taking it pretty far.
It is. I just don't want anything to happen to this damn thing. So,
well, yeah, I agree with that. And again, I don't recommend, you know, leaving keys in the car. And it reminds me, and this actually happened many years ago. Our friend Paul and I were in grade school. We're probably in junior high or something. And we used to ride our bicycles to a local gas station and get a candy bar and a Coke. And
yeah,
the summertime, you're at that age where you're not old enough to work, but you're old enough to be left at home, and you know, you got nothing to do in the summer, summertime blues.
Mm-hmm.
So we used to sit on the window ledge in front of this gas station and just watch people just sit there and BS, and, you know, friends would come by every once in a while. You know, almost like Jay and Silent Bob, you know, except without the drugs. And this woman pulls up in one of those. It was like an 83, 82 Eldorado convertible.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, those are pretty rare. And she parks the gas pump, and she puts gas, and then she goes in, and she comes back out, and she starts flipping around looking for her keys, and she's freaking out. And she's like, I locked the keys in the car. Oh, no. And she starts panicking, and we're like, the top's down.
Oh, no. Come on, lady.
This actually happened. And she course realized their keys were within reach and got in the car, and there you go.
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's too good to be true. I love it. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I didn't do that, but
good Lord.
So, yeah, no kidding. So it was you know, overall very nice day. Got a lot of stuff done, and looking forward to getting a few more things done. I was thinking about that therapeutic effects of listening to music, and it made me think of something that we can add to our podcast.
Oh,
some added value to our listener.
All right, I'm all for it.
Yeah. So it's becoming obvious to me that most people consume their podcasts in their commute while they're driving.
Mm, yes.
I know.
I am no different.
Yep. I'll do that. Or when I'm walking in the neighborhood or something, which I haven't done as much of as I need to. So, and then what happens? You finish the podcast. If you're not all the way to where you're going to be, what do? You flip on the radio or in my case, I stream something and,
right.
Listen to whatnot. So I thought, why don't we just start sharing a good, maybe previously unknown cruising song?
Okay.
We're throwing out every episode.
Done.
Yeah, why not? So I'll start because I made this up. Okay. I'm not going to put you on the spot. but if you get a pencil and a piece of paper and you can write down, because I know you write down the trivia questions, listeners out there.
Yes.
There's a great song by Joe Bonamassa, who's a, if you're not familiar, he's a huge blues personality, tremendous guitar player, actually a car guy to a degree. And he has a record called Time Clocks and a song called The Heart That Never Waits.
Nice.
And this is like a perfect soundtrack for a road trip cruise. I mean, it's great. It's blues. It's kind of heavy. It's got a good backbeat to it. Uh-huh. It's like blues with a big cam, That's
okay.
What it sounds like.
I like it.
Yeah, I do too. So there you go, friends.
Click
it
on.
That one. That's it, man. I mentioned if I did or not, but you can get it on Spotify and, wherever you tune in your streaming services. And that's a good one.
Sounds good. I wish we could have the rights to that. We could play it on the show at the end.
Yeah, we could, but we don't, so we can't.
Yeah. And just like that, good time's gone.
Yeah, low budget operation here.
Right.
We'd be playing a lot more. This would just be a music show if we had that opportunity, man. I think. And we did the music show a long time ago, and I think we might be able to do that again. And for those who haven't heard that, the strategy was because we did not have the rights. You and I talked about, I think we came up with, 10 songs apiece?
Yeah, something like that.
That we thought were good cartoons or cruising music and whatnot. And then we made that a YouTube playlist so that YouTube was able to play the actual song between our bits. And that was a good one. So that's not in the regular podcast stream. That's
not
on iTunes, and it's not anywhere else. It's only on YouTube.
Oh.
Because it's that playlist.
Because
it's that
playlist. That's right.
So, and I think that's actually on the V8 TV channel. So if you go to YouTube, look up V8 TV, go to playlists, and you'll find the V8 Radio music show, and you can tune that one in. It's worth it. And we should maybe do another one of those, too.
I'd be down for that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was. It was. I don't know. I guess, working in the garage, I'm always listening to something. And this past week, actually yesterday, I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole because I stumbled across a recording from a guy who was on the radio in Chicago in the 90s. I'm sure you remember Kevin Matthews.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Yeah. Great guy.
Yeah. Anybody in the Chicago area, the Midwest, that listened to stuff in the 90s was familiar with Kevin Matthews. WLUP was the radio station. They launched an AM station, AM 1000, and it was Jonathan Brandmeier and Buzz Killman in the morning, and then Kevin Matthews at midday, Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer in the afternoon. And at one point, it was a guy named Ed Till at night. And it was things that, a lot of inside Chicago jokes and,
Right.
Kevin Matthews was basically insane. He's one of these people that could do, 10 different voices talking to each other at the same time, having different conversations at
and
different
you believe
levels.
It. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It sounds, one was here and one was over here, and they're back and forth. And you know, Jim Shorts was his sports guy, and he made fun of another Chicago personality named Ed Schwartz, and just awesome at impersonations and whatnot. And back in those days, man, I spent a lot of time listening to that, you know, at work and in the car. And it was a station that you could listen to morning to night. They had dynamite talent the whole time. Mm-hmm. And Matthews recently kind of articulated what happened, because it all came apart. And Steve Dahl and Gary Meyer have a podcast now. Brandmeier does an occasional podcast. Kevin Matthews is not doing anything on radio. He's in Michigan, where he's from. And essentially it was satellite radio.
Really?
Well, and the way satellite killed terrestrial talk, personality-based radio, is that now you had the option to listen to 100 different channels with no commercials.
Yep.
And people just tuned out, and the advertisers tuned out, and these cats were expensive to keep on the air. These are high-level talent.
Right, yeah.
And the same thing happened in New York and in L.A. and in the syndicated shows, and now, you know, what was I saying? Now we listen to Spotify in the car.
Yeah. I don't remember the last time I listened to terrestrial radio. Mm-hmm. I always have something streaming, because I have a playlist on either Apple Podcasts or Apple Music or Spotify. And if I'm not listening to a podcast, I'll tune into a music list that I have going.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And so in a very strange way, so back in those days, I was in college and I did some work in radio and I really enjoyed it. And I wasn't good enough to make any money at it. But the concept of being at that level was like, you know, every guy's dream that
right.
was in broadcast of any kind. And as we say this, it dawns on me that you and I have replaced Kevin Matthews in people's cars.
Oh, man.
Just without the talent or the millions of dollars that went along with it.
Oh, what a world we live in. Holy cow.
I know. It's crazy.
We are the new John Reckers Landecker.
Oh, man. He's another one. That guy is insane. There's a John Reckers Landecker was an AM music DJ,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the AM gold era, the 70s and 80s, after the 60s. I guess the 60s was the AM gold. But you get bored, jump on YouTube, and there's an interview with John Reckers Landecker where he's on the air at WLS in Chicago. And somebody's talking to him, and he's firing off the commercials and reading his bits and doing all this stuff. And then he just leans over and talks to this guy back and forth
right.
real time without missing a beat.
Yeah. He's so signaling sharp. The engineer and doing stuff on his console. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a high level of function to be able to do that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I can't walk and chew gum at the same time. And this guy is just firing things off and having an interview and running this whole show and mm-hmm. without, you know, like you said, without skipping a beat. It's crazy.
Yeah, and he's smoking in the studio in the old days.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see how far it's come. And, you know, both, so my Riviera has an AM radio from the factory
mm-hmm.
With a dash speaker. My Galaxy had an AM with a front and rear speaker. A single in the back seat.
Fancy.
You know, like similar to, you know, the Impalas and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't help but think, you know, back in the 60s, the Galaxy was built in California, and who was on the air then that they were listening to? You know, Wolfman Jack or, you know, who was it screaming through that little speaker right there at one point?
Yeah, that's cool, man. It's cool to think about that.
It kind of is.
Yeah. Yeah, that car was there for it.
It was. This car was there through a lot of stuff. I mean, it was born in June 25th, 62. Mm-hmm. Holy mackerel, it's got an anniversary birthday coming up.
Yeah, holy cow.
62 to 22, it's 60 years. Jeez.
That's nuts, man. These cars are this old.
I am not going to look that good at 60.
No, man. I don't look that good at 52.
Yeah, right, exactly. So it was built after the Cuban Missile Crisis, I think, in some of the early 60s.
right,
Cold War nonsense. Mm-hmm. But crazy to think that this car is still sitting here, and today, thanks to the stuff going on in Northern Europe, here comes the the threat of the Russians and communism all over again.
Yeah, good Lord. Mm-hmm. That is nuts that what's happening right now.
And I guess, you know, for us, I'm not one to get into politics, but we're obviously seeing it at the pump. And
yep,
you and I were complaining about those gas prices a little while ago. And hopefully that doesn't, you know, put the big kibosh on a lot of these automotive events, you know, because people have been dying to get out on the road and go do stuff. And now if it's like, you know, if it costs you double to go down the road in your old car, I hope that doesn't.
Yeah, I hope it not either. And I can't help but think that it will. I mean, I'll probably not drive my GTO as much if it's going to cost me, you know, $80, $90 to fill it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's, and I got to run 93,
mm-hmm.
93 octane. It's going to be a lot. So
you're going to have to plan and savor those drives.
Yeah, man.
It's a bummer. Yeah.
It is a bummer. Now that definitely becomes like a luxury item almost, rather than a quick escape.
Yeah, so. And you'll watch all the knee-jerk reactions of, you know, trucks going on sale again, and they're already pushing the EVs, and, you know.
Yeah.
Boy.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I think that's, you know, even more of a testament to these people who say, well, this stuff, all these gasoline cars are going to go away, and, you know, you and your classics and muscle cars, you know, your time's limited. But then I just point to this Galaxy, and it's like, this is a 60-year-old car, and it's still sitting here today, and I don't see it going away.
No. I don't either, to be honest with you. No time soon. Probably not in my lifetime anyway.
Yeah, it's been through the big gas crunch of the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And the 08, 09 turn down and the $4 a gallon back then and all that stuff. And somebody cared enough, and here it is. So I think that's always a good sign.
Agreed. And even if it, God forbid, we do, gasoline does go away or it just becomes so prohibitively expensive, there are still alternatives. And hopefully, the hydrogen becomes a thing, and some of these can be converted to hydrogen powered rather than just gas powered, and you can still have your engine and go down the road. And some people even convert these to electric, which, you know, is a whole another polarizing subject to a lot of people, but it's still something that can happen.
Well, the cool thing is our friend Mike Copeland, who did that hydrogen powered truck,
mm-hmm.
that is on display right now at the Detroit Autorama, which is, you know, home of the Riddler Award. Mm-hmm. They announced the Grade 8 yesterday, and there's a lot of really unbelievable cars. And SEMA put out a webinar about hydrogen-powered cars.
No kidding.
Yeah, I think it was last week. And I believe Copeland was part of that, which tells me that, you know, that could be a thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hoping it's more of a thing than we think at this point.
Yes, agreed. If we can get some infrastructure in place and get fueling stations across the country and really grow it, yeah, that can be a thing.
Yeah. Well, we will, I guess time will tell. It's all I can say, but hopefully it'll turn back around and we'll be able to get out and enjoy these cars more and more. The people at the Firebird Fest really set out to have a driving event, you know, that wasn't just a car show with a lawn chair. And, you know, as Gray Baskerville used to say, your car chair, your lawn chair, and then or your car parked in the shade and your lawn chair, and then birds crapping on you all day. You
know? Well, what a great show.
Yeah. But we'll see. Another interesting bit of news that I can finally reveal this past week. Kind of two big things happened. We talked last time about the television distribution for VATV and Muscle Car of the Week through High Octane.
Yeah.
That went live this past week.
It did go live. I checked it out.
Did you see it?
Yeah. I downloaded the High Octane app on my Amazon Fire TV, and everything's there. It's great.
Yeah, it's cool. They did a nice job with that interface. It's real clean.
Yeah, yeah, it is real clean.
And there's some other good shows there, and it's free. So if you're into motorsports TV, car stuff, go check that out, High Octane. I think it is going to be available on Apple TV as well soon. I don't have that, so I don't know. But the Amazon is for sure, and Roku as well. But the other one is I finally got the go-ahead to produce the SCTA podcast.
You did?
I did, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good stuff, man. Right on.
Yeah, so the way this is going to go, the SCTA, of course, is the Southern California Timing Association, mm-hmm. the sanctioning body for the land speed racing that occurs out at El Mirage and at Bonneville. And as you know, I'm caught up in that. I think that stuff's super cool.
It is.
And I look at, I'm not a racer. I'm not an engine builder, you know, in that world. But I want to help. I want to help spread the word and contribute any way I can. So what can I do is this kind of stuff. So
cool, man.
I thought it'd be kind of neat to do a podcast with them. And I approached them back at the PRI show in Indy. And it was a little bit out of left field because the SCTA is a different kind of organization. It's very traditional. It's been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody joked that they call it the Senior Citizen Timing Association. And that it's a bunch of old guys, you know, talking about old times and old hot rods.
Right.
And that's largely true in many ways. And that image needs to evolve if they want this to continue and grow. And the racers are definitely at the forefront of technology and understand that times change. And for them, it becomes new opportunities to get new records and new classes. So there's guys running electric streamliners out there that are going insanely fast.
Really?
Oh, yeah. 350 some miles an hour already. Oof. Yeah. And it just, it doesn't make any noise. It's just, and it's gone. So, but the organization itself, I think, was a little bit on the conservative side. And after some conversations back and forth, we kind of figured out a way to do this. So I have the blessing to do the Bonneville podcast from the SCTA, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I'll be producing and working with different guests, engine builders, racers, car builders, officials. Going to target 12 episodes for the first year. So we do one a month and see how it goes. Yeah, yeah.
Right on, man. So are you going to do it alone or are you going to have a co-host with it?
I think I know you're pretty busy.
I wasn't angling for that.
I think it's actually going to start me and a guest.
Okay.
If there's somebody out there that you know wants to be involved, I'm in this to promote the sport. So if somebody who wants to do it and is qualified and is willing to set the time aside and do it, then great. Already have a pretty long list of guests that are going to be pretty interesting. Yeah. Steve Watt from Maxwell Industries, the guys that built the Speed Demon Streamliner.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure we'll talk to our friends at ARP because ARP does more than make bolts. They're out there racing.
Is that right?
Chris Rashke is actually the guy who is now driving the Speed Demon.
Oh, yeah.
Operations guy at ARP, yeah. He's been on the so him and Steve Watt are good friends. Their shops are both in Ventura, California, so they spend a lot of time together, and that's how that all kind of came together. And the engines built by Kenny Duttweiler and Chris Rashke worked at Duttweiler's machine shop a million years ago, and it was a tight-knit group over there, and of course, Poteet is part of that as the car owner.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure we'll have all those guys on.
And dig it.
Duttweiler is just an amazing, amazing person with his knowledge of how to make things go fast. And but then we're trying to reach out to show people that aren't familiar with this, you know, how and why it's cool. Because the problem with land speed racing is that you can't identify with it unless you're doing it.
I see that, yeah.
You know, you go to your local car show and it's like, oh, there's a Camaro. I see him driving around all the time. And
right.
my friend had one, or mm-hmm. I own one, or whatever. Oh yeah, there's a 500 mile an hour streamliner. Who's got one of those? Nobody.
Nobody.
I know. I've never seen one move. Never, you know. I've seen a video on TV, maybe. So to share what that's all about, and to trigger that you can get involved. Mm-hmm. People can do this. It's not limited to
that 500 mile an hour streamliner.
For sure. And you don't need to be a Duttweiler and a Steve Watt and a George Poteet to be able to do this. And the vast majority of Bonneville racers are not super highly financed and cutting edge. They're regular people that are just out there bringing it, you know, and it's man versus machine. It's man and machine versus the salt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no, when you think about it, it's such a crazy way to race because there's nowhere to practice.
Oh, that's a good point.
You can't go to your local drag strip on Wednesday night and do a test and tune.
No.
With a streamliner or even a motorcycle that's going to go 250 miles an hour. I mean, you can't do it.
No.
So you have to get your stuff together at home.
At the race.
And then when it gets there, it has to stay together.
Right.
And you're going to have problems, so you got to figure it out, which means you need a good team. And that to me is where all the fascination is how these guys are able to do all this.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the term guys and gals, you know,
right.
Equally. So if we can share that, that compelling storyline and the draw of what it's like to be involved at that level of teamwork, again, with no corporate sponsorship whatsoever, it's all low buck, old school,
mm-hmm.
run what you brung. It's got to be safe, you know,
right.
And here you go. So it's the essence of hot rodding in many ways. Plus the fact that it is the essence of hot rodding. It's got 80 years of history. I mean, it's
for sure. To echo back on what you said about how anybody can do this, it's not relegated to just those super fast vehicles. We had you asked a trivia question on this show about what was the slowest speed record attained at Bonneville. What was it, like 90 miles an hour? Or
no, it was like
50.
29, I think. Or
yeah,
something
it was
like
a 50 cc something?
No, it was the Omega class, which is this. It's a class of propulsion that doesn't fit any engine or mm-hmm. you can use rubber bands and, you know, a fan. I mean, really anything you want basically to propel this thing. And of course some of these things aren't going to go very fast. So,
right.
So, you know, there's all that. And don't get me wrong. If you are into the technology, that's where you're going to find it too, because mm-hmm. the use of exotic materials and high strength steel and titanium and carbon and engine management, to be able to go 5 miles at hammer down under full boost, that takes a special engine, a special way to build it, and a special way to tune it,
mm-hmm.
and, of course, drive the thing. And there's a lot of preconceived notions, I think, about racing that don't hold up at Bonneville. So when you think of a race car, you think, oh, you know, it's got a cage, it's lightweight, it's got aluminum, little skin body. Mm-hmm. Bonneville cars need to be half. They need to be heavy.
They need to be heavy.
They need to be stable. They need to have traction. So these things are, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 pounds.
That's insane that they go that fast.
Yeah, and there's ballast on them that they move around and all this stuff. So if you don't know anything about it and you do know about drag racing or you know about NASCAR or whatever, be prepared to throw most of that out the window and learn a whole new thing. Which is another part of why that's fascinating, because if you grew up watching NHRA your whole life and you're to the point where it's like, yeah, I've seen Pro Stock, you know, yeah, I've seen Top Fuel and it's cool, but, you know, and you're looking for something interesting to get into, you need to check this out because it's all different.
And for sure. I mean, a huge range of classes that you can look at. I mean, my God.
Every pit's different, the guy next to you, and there's the camaraderie of everybody working together to help each other, you know, set records and do all that fun stuff. So hopefully within the next month we'll get the first episode out. It's going to be called Bonneville Up to Speed.
Okay, cool. Look for it on all your podcast platforms, people.
That's right. Yeah, subscribe to that one, and we'll see how it goes. It should be fun. I'm looking forward to learning a lot about that world through this.
Likewise.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll subscribe. I'll actually listen.
Hey!
Hey!
While driving.
While driving. Not
take that,
trying
Kevin
to,
Matthews.
Yeah. Not setting a speed record, though.
Yeah, no. Just got to conserve that fuel.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. Holy cow.
Yeah. Well, we need to end on a high note. So let's reveal the answers to our trivia question.
Let's do that, man. All right. All right, Kev, I asked you, let me find my notes here. What was the first front-wheel drive car to pace the Daytona 500? And for the bonus, I asked what year. And you said an 05 Camry, Mr. Q-Ball. Man. All right. Unfortunately, that's not correct.
I figured.
The correct answer is a 1988 Grand Prix.
An 88 Grand Prix. Grand Prix. The very first of that new style.
Yeah. 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 Pace the Daytona.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Those cars, those were cool. In fact, I knew a guy who had one. And this is an interesting way to look at Pontiac's marketing. Mm-hmm. Because the new Grand Prix that came out was front drive. It looked like a rear drive car.
It was a cool looking car.
It had good proportions, long nose, short deck, you know, a hard top style. I mean, it was cool. And the guy that I knew that had one, believe it or not, said he bought it brand new because he got behind the wheel and he felt the shifter and it reminded him of his 67 GTO.
Get out of town. That's killer.
Yeah, it was.
Love it.
So that whole thing worked. That's exactly what GM wanted to do, you know, get people that were pining for something in the past that, you know, were maybe a little bit nervous about going into the future technology and make them comfortable.
Nice. Well done, GM. Love it.
Yeah, but not well done me. So
I thought you were going to say, but not well done you, Q, because here's the answer to your question.
My question to you is, what is the Chavera? And your answer was a GM product that was sold in Mexico exclusively for the Mexican market and a van.
Yeah, I don't know why I threw that out there, but I did.
Well, it's a tremendously detailed answer, and I think if I dissect that, I think the Chev of Chavera, you know, so GM, Chevrolet. But then the Mexican thing, I don't really understand. But the van,
I don't know.
You know, it had a V in it, so Chavan, Chavera.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Chavera does sound Spanish.
Yeah.
The way it ends in you know, A. But unfortunately.
Led me right through the chute just to put the bullet in my head right there. There it is.
Nah, I'm giving credit where it's due, man. That was it was a good answer. It was a negatively correct answer. Another negative win here.
Right.
The Chavera was possibly the first pro touring car. In fact, it was a Chevrolet Camaro built by, you guessed it, Herb Adams.
Yeah. Ah, jeez.
It was the Chevrolet equivalent of the Fire Am Trans Am that we weaved into the show. High performance suspension and whatnot. The name was a poke at the Porsche Carrera. It was the Chevera.
Oh, jeez.
Because it was road racing Chevrolet. So.
Boo.
Yeah, I get it. But a neat car.
Sounds neat. Yeah, I'll have to check that out.
I'm sure you will.
The Chavera car. I was way off.
Yeah, you know, a Chevrolet that eats Porsches or a Mexican van, you know.
Yeah, Mexican van. Sounds right. Let's go with that one. Nailed it.
Made sense.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right, well, man, we covered a lot of ground on this show.
Yeah, man.
I hope you have continuing success cleaning the garage.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'll probably get right back at it. Yeah.
Jump on your streamer and look up Joe Bonamassa. The album is Time Clocks, The Heart That Never Waits. I said it's a cruising song, but it'd be a good garage song as well.
All right, cool. We'll check it out.
There you go. And to everybody else, we appreciate you tuning in once again. Always love that positive feedback that we've been getting. Thank you so much for that.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure to subscribe on the Apple thing or the Spotify thing or all the rest of them. That way you won't miss anything from V8 Radio, because I know you don't want to miss it.
No, never.
Yeah, me neither. All right, my man. That's about all I got for today.
Right on, Buzz. All I got. Yeah.
Then we will remind everybody to, you know, find the cheapest gas you can for your Mexican van, and we'll talk to you next time on V8 Radio.